ladies and gentlemen. Very pleased to be here from the law school. Nice gathering of interested people. Many of you may think of us as a patent court. We are a patent court in the sense that we hear all patent deals from the around the United States. We are not a patent court, actually, because we hear other kinds of cases. We are the patent court in the sense that we hear all patent deals. We also hear other kinds of cases, and today is an excellent illustration of that fact. Today we have six cases on our calendar, one from the Court of International Trade here in New York, one from the Court of Federal Claims in Washington, one from the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims in Washington, and three from the Merit Systems Protection Board, Government Employee Appeals, that is also in Washington. The latter three have been submitted on the briefs, and therefore will not be argued. So, if any of you came here thinking that we will hear patent appeals, we're sorry to disappoint you. The calendar is created systematically without any attempt to have certain kinds of deals, the way they come at us is the way we hear them. So we will hear today the international trade case, the claims case, and the veterans case. First case is Samuel Aaron versus the United States, 2006-1591. Mr. Simon.
Good morning, Your Honors. We please the court. My name is Joel Simon. I'm partner in the law firm Serco Simon Cook and Kane. And I'm here this morning for you on behalf of plaintiff appellant Samuel Aaron Incorporated. This is a case of first impression in which the court is called upon to determine the legality of a customs procedure called offline liquidation process. The Court of International Trade below found on the first motion for summary judgment that Customs February 8, 1999 offline liquidation was valid. Plaintiff failed to timely file a protest within 90 days of the February 8, 1999 date of liquidation. As a result, the court case was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. We believe that the court has erred in four vital areas, and thus should be reversed by this court. Firstly, on February 8, 1999, no liquidation of the entries involved herein had occurred, as at that date, customs had neither done a final computation nor had they ascertained the duty due on entries involved.
Well, Mr. Simon, if the court finds that the offline bulletin notice was sufficient notice, would that be enough for the reliquidation of the duties?
No, Your Honor. And the reason why I believe that it does not is that notice per se is sort of like putting the cart before the horse. There must first be a liquidation, then there is notice. The purpose that notice serves, is that we had at that time a 90-day statutory limitations to file a protest to object to that liquidation. So that before the mere posting of a liquidation or of a date of an entry, without having done the actual liquidation, is a nullity. It doesn't mean anything. Because what happens here is that on February 8th, 1999, the customs authorities thought, or believed, that they were going to reliquidate these entries and send out bills for duties. But on that date, There was nothing on record anywhere that would notify anyone that, in fact, something had been done to those entries, other than they're on this list on a piece of paper that was put in a book that was so different from all notices of liquidation that are treated by customs in the Port of New York.
Well, it was in the place where such notices normally appear, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it was labeled liquidation in Greece?
Well, it was labeled in the book, but it was not done in the proper format. It was not done in the proper form. As a young man, Your Honor, I have dubious honor as a young associate to go to the custom house in those days. And
You're not testifying.
No, I'm not testifying. I'm trying to explain to you what that system, what that looks like. And I'm qualifying it a little bit because I don't have the same memory today that I had 35 years ago when I was doing that. And in fact, 34 years ago, I appeared before this court when it was the CCPA. So I'm still trying to get this thing right. But what happened then, Iman? There is a room in the basement of the Custom House of the 6 World Trade Center. It was a fairly large room. It had 6 or 8 tables and it had binders. Binders that were maybe 3 or 4 inches thick with computer printouts. Every binder had a date on it. Those dates were the liquidation dates. So if someone was going to look, they would go into that room and they would look at that date, at those books.
The judge below conceded that the government was administratively sloppy, quote unquote, but concluded that the court could not say that the Bolton Oaks liquidation of February 8th was legally insufficient.
Your Honor, if I may, on those bulletin notices, at that date, in the record, that bulletin notice was in the record of, on 0078 of the appendix, there's the bulletin notices. And it says, the expensive bulletin notices. And it says, bulletin notice of liquidation, dated February, and then below that says, dated February 8th, 1999. And it has entry time, entry number, date of entry, importer number, and remarks. Also in the, on page 0081 of the joint appendix, is a liquidation bulletin, the way Customs does it on a regular basis, dated April 30th of 1999, same year, 150 days later. That bulletin notice, Your Honor, not only gives the entry number, date of entry, et cetera, it tells what the purpose of what was happening to that entry, says increased, but it gives something called document file location. And what's the purpose of that? Well, the 90 days to file a protest runs from the date that this entry is put in.
Do we have fact finding here to which we have to defer, on which we have to defer in the trial court?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
The
court went directly to the fact, just looked at the fact that on February 8th there was a liquidation, and then the protest to be filed was more than 90 days after February 8th, there was no jurisdiction, and the court didn't go any further. Though all of these records were introduced in the court below. And the purpose of it is that liquidation is not merely Customs putting something on the record and posting it in the Custom House, even if it was done appropriately. It's a combination of things. First, preceding that, as a condition precedent of putting that notice up, there has to be a liquidation that was done.
Well, this was a reliquidation, right?
But a reliquidation, Your Honor, by definition of the statute, is the same. It's done in the same manner as a liquidation. And I direct the court to CFR 159.1, where Customs defines for us what a liquidation is. And it says,
Final computation of due.
Exactly. That's the first thing that happens. And then the notice of that gets posted. And then the 90 days starts to run. But on February,
Simon, excuse me for interrupting, but the offline bulletin notice did specifically note that it contained the words reliquidation increase applicable to each entry, does it not? That's on page 0012 of the page 12 in the lower court's opinion.
It says, yes,
because of February 1999,
yes,
notice.
Yes, the posted bill notice. Title bill notice of liquidation contains words reliquidation and increase.
And there was lodged in the custom house room where all bulletin notices are kept?
Yes, but it was not on customs form 4333.
And what says it has to be on customs forms 4333?
Customs regulation 159.9E.
But isn't that harmless error?
It's harmless error from the government standpoint, Your Honor, but if I'm looking at that, and remember, I think if you go to that, you're looking for a customs notice of liquidation, and you go into this room, and there is 50 or 100 of these books, and they're all noticed, they're all this thick, they're all noticed as a custom notices of liquidation. If you would look at that document, if you want to look at the document in the actual document, not the not those paraphrases in the court, but if you want to look at the document on page 0078, it says bullet notice of liquidation, right? And it says dated over here February 8th. But it doesn't, but if one looks at a actual what customs does regularly, not offline. It says bullet notice of entries liquidated, liquidation date 4/30/99. This document does not say liquidation date. It just says that this document was made on February 8th. But if one is looking at liquidations day in and day out, this document is very, very different from this document, of which there are literally thousands of pages. Of these documents produced by the Customs Service every year in the Port of New York alone. Now, one of the officials at Customs in New York stated that this document, the February 8th offline document, goes into a book and is one book for the year. These documents, which are the liquidation dates, go one book for the date. So,
I'm not clear on that.
No, on April 30th, there is a book. There is a book for April 30th. There will be a book for 30th. And liquidations only occur on Friday, so it's every 7 days. So there's April 30th, then there will be a book for May 7th, then there will be a book for May 14th, et cetera, et cetera. And there may be more than one book. There may be two books. And the books are literally a page after page of this type with maybe 20 or 30 entries on it. So one would have to know, number one, that such a thing as an offline liquidation existed. Your Honor, if I may, there is nothing in the statute, there, in any statute, there's nothing in the regulations that mentions the word offline liquidation. The only time there's a mention of offline liquidation is in customs standard operating procedures.
Mr. Simon, you're into your rebuttal time. You can use it now or save it.
I'll save that, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Miller. You're going to defend the practice that the trial court stated was administratively sloppy.
That's correct.
Yeah, very
good. It is the court. The appellant has gone to great lengths to explain how complicated this case is. I would now like to explain how simple it is. A quantity of jewelry from Thailand arrived at the United States. The necessary entry paperwork was filed to identify the merchandise, value of merchandise, the tariff classification, and the estimated duties. The appellant then deposited an amount of money equivalent to those duties. Customs then liquidated the entries, however, refunded the money for the jewelry because Customs believed at that point that the jewelry was entitled to duty-free treatment. Subsequently, Customs realized that it made a mistake. The jewelry was not entitled to duty-free treatment. Therefore, it needed to recoup the money it had refunded to the appellant. Therefore, it reliquidated the entries, it posted a bulletin notice, and it issued a bill.
Was there a final computation?
Absolutely. The evidence in this regard is uncontroverted. Lawrence Bryant, who was a customs official, indicated that prior to posting the bulletin notice, customs had received from headquarters a memo indicating that they had to recoup the money that they had refunded on the jewelry from Thailand. How did they know what amount of money that was? They knew it because it was equivalent to the money they had refunded at the liquidation. Consequently, to say that customs didn't know what amount of money it needed to recoup is erroneous.
But did appellant?
I'm sorry?
Did the importer?
Well, the importer was the one who provided us with the information. The entry papers were filed by the appellant in which it indicated what the merchandise was, the value of the merchandise, the tariff classification, and the amount of money it estimated was due.
But I don't think there's any dispute that the process, some of the aspects of the process followed here was different than the process typically followed by customs, correct? And there are differences, right?
If you mine the record, you can find subtle little differences, yes. But the basic facts of the case are not disputed.
And what happened afterwards when they filed? Didn't this take an enormous amount of time in the review process? I mean, before you got to the Court of International Trade, this was at Customs. It took Customs a few years to resolve this, correct? There seemed to have been a time lag.
I'm just wondering,
you said it was all so simple.
Well, in terms of customs procedures, I mean, it posted the bulletin notice, which is the legal evidence of a liquidation, or in this case, a reliquidation. From that point, the importer had 90 days to challenge that liquidation. The importer didn't do it. Now, based on 19 U.S.C. 1514, that decision is final and conclusive.
But why wasn't a regular bulletin notice published instead of a regular bulletin notice?
Well, it's a regular bulletin notice in the sense that it contains the same information as another bulletin notice. The only reason why it's called an offline bulletin notice is because it's not generated through the customs computer, which is how it typically does. In this case,
was it generated in a proper format?
Absolutely. Comparison of the offline bulletin notice, as it's been called, and the ACS-generated bulletin notice, which I believe is the one the account was referring to, and the standard form, the information on these forms is identical. They all contain some variation of the phrase bulletin notice. They possess the district report, the entry number, the importer's name, the entry date, and remarks, in this case, reliquidation inquiries.
Is there a separate book for the bulletin notice to be filed?
The offline bulletin notice?
Yes.
Yes.
Separate from the regular notice?
It's placed in the testimony of customs is placed in a folder and it's placed in the room designated for making bulletin notices available to the public.
So if the bulletin notice is placed in a separate folder, is that, according to your thinking, sufficient notice at that point in time, even though the importer is looking at the regular bulletin notices?
Well, it absolutely is. The legal sufficiency of the bulletin notice is tested based upon whether or not it's placed in a conspicuous place at the customs house. Now, this court in Frederick Wholesale stated that it wasn't going to use a wooden construction of the term conspicuous, but it was going to say whether or not a prudent importer exercising reasonable diligence could find it.
Now, how would they label?
I'm sorry?
How is the binder labeled?
I don't actually know that. Mr. Simon says that the binder was not labeled. However, I would point out that Mr. Simon's affidavit, he went to the customs house 2 years after the time period in question to look for this offline bulletin notice, and he found it. It was right on the table in the middle of the room. So it seems that the testimony or the argument of the appellant is that you could only find it if you were looking for it. But that's precisely the point. It's the importer's duty to look for it. And it's also uncontroverted that the procedure for posting the offline bulletin notices in this fashion had been in place since at the least 1974.
Are you saying that the notice was equivalent to Customs Form 4333, even though it didn't say Customs Form 4333?
Absolutely. Customs Form 4333 is simply the name for a form that contains certain information. As I indicated, the offline bulletin notice contains all the same substantive information that a regular generated notice would contain. And I'd also point out that
literally, the notice was not on that form.
Well, the form that the appellant referred to repeatedly as the typical form is also not on the standard form. It is on a slightly different form because it's generated by computers.
So why publish a form if you're not going to use it?
Well, in this case, the reason why Customs deviated from using that specific form was because of the nature of the number of entries that needed to be reliquidated. When Customs realized that the juror from Thailand wasn't entitled to duty-free status, it was faced with having to reliquidate at least around 1,000 entries, I believe. Therefore, based upon the way the computer system was set up, they couldn't use the typical format to post a bulletin notice, so they had to use an offline bulletin notice.
If this was all so clear and conspicuous, why did the Customs Office feel the need to issue the March memorandum, the March 99 memorandum, in fact, telling these folks they were going to have, they were going to owe the duties that they had been funded?
Well, at the very least, I would say that that memo was simply a courtesy. The only notice that Customs is obligated to give is the bulletin notice. The memo was simply a courtesy.
Why was there a need for a courtesy? Why was it a courtesy if everyone had received the appropriate notice a month earlier?
Well, I don't know if everyone received it. The notice was placed as was required at the Customs House.
So this memo is, in case you missed it the first round, here's what we're doing?
Well, it explained the rationale, yes.
But that was too late. I mean, it would have been too late then.
No, it would have been too late.
So the clock you're suggesting would have necessarily run.
Well, the clock was running since February 8th when the bulletin notice was posted. I mean, I would also point out that as it is the duty of importers to review the bulletin notices, this would perhaps be a different case had the importer gone to the room, seen the offline bulletin notice, and been somehow confused by it. But that's not the evidence. The evidence is they never went there. They never looked at the offline bulletin notice. They were never confused by the fact that there was no customs form 4333 on the notice.
Wait a minute, I don't understand. So you're saying if they had actually gone, and now they were sitting here and say, we went and we were confused, essentially making the same substantive arguments as they're making here in terms of the discrepancy between the two processes, that would be a different case?
It would be a different case, but they would still lose.
It would be hard for you to argue against
them. No, they would have a better argument. However, under this court's decision in Goldhopper, where the bulletin notice incorrectly stated the importer's name, was then crossed out manually corrected. In that case, the importer challenged us, saying that wasn't a valid bulletin notice. And the court said, at the very least, you had to inquire to find out, does this apply to me? So at the very least, an importer has a duty to review the bulletin notices. And if there's anything strange about it, to at the very least ask someone at Customs, does this apply to me?
How difficult would it be for Customs to give direct action notice by mail to the importer? Has that ever been done?
I don't know. I don't know if it has ever been done. However, I don't believe that it's necessary. In fact, I believe also in Goldhopper, the court addressed that very issue because there was an issue in that case whether or not the courtesy notice constituted legal evidence of some kind, and the failure to give it would toll the time. And the court found that posting the bulletin notice at the Customs House satisfied all the Malang factors. That is to say that it doesn't rely on chance to notify the importer. It's placed in a room at the Customs House that everyone knows that's where the bulletin notices are posted. It is designed to attract attention. The bulletin notice is titled Bulletin Notice. It lists the name of the importer, the entry dates, and the entry numbers.
But that's a regular bulletin notice.
That's correct. Well, this is
an offline bulletin notice that we're talking about.
Well, the term offline is of no legal significance. It was a shorthand used by Customs, as indicated in the evidence, simply to differentiate from the ACS-generated bulletin notice, the bulletin notices.
But one is not in the same binder as the offline bulletin notice. Offline bulletin notice, as we understand it, is in a different binder in the same location, but in a different folder.
That is correct. However, I believe that is really of no importance, and I would point this court to the case of Frederick Wholesale, where the importer argued that the lack of a sign in the lobby somehow made it impossible for them to find the bulletin notice. And again, the court said a prudent importer would ask the information desk where that room is. If the importer goes to the room, presumably they have a duty to ask. And in this case, the evidence is that the posting of the offline bulletin notices in this fashion had been in place since 1974. I would submit to the court that a prudent importer would know of a procedure that had been in place for decades for posting the offline bulletin notice.
The statute says that notice should be given pursuant to an electronic data interchange system. That didn't occur, right?
Well, the statute actually says to give or transmit.
And you're saying, how about reading it to mean give pursuant to an electronic data interchange system?
Well, I think that would contradict the plain meaning of a plain reading of the statute, which says give or transmit, which implies an option.
You're saying the commas set off the subsequent phrase to modify only transmit, not give.
Correct, Your Honor. In addition, to read give and transmit as being interchangeable would violate the redundancy rule, whereby both of these words would mean the same thing, therefore would simply be of no account.
What's the difference between give and transmit?
Well, customs...
You're giving an object.
Yes.
Are you transmitting an object?
Well, transmit implies something additional. I would say that it implies some type of electronic aspect to it.
Well, that would be redundant with respect to the following.
Well, no, the pursuant to an electronic data interchange system is in commas and clearly modifies transmit. And as I indicated in my brief, legislative history bears this out. The statute used to read simply give notice, and the or transmit and the rest of that was inserted between that.
Do we have to determine how conspicuous bulletin notice provisions would be and what needs to be done in order for those to be conspicuous? If they're at the bottom of the pile or behind somebody's drawer, is that sufficient?
Well, if that were the evidence, that would perhaps be a tough case. That is not the evidence. The evidence here is that the notice was placed in the folder as it had been for decades and was placed in the room, openly accessible to the public. And there's been no evidence that people were ever willing to look for that folder or people.
Is that procedure, is there a manifest?
Yes.
It seems stunningly arcane compared to everything else that the company does now, doesn't it?
Well, it's merely the posting of the notes. I mean, Mr. Simon describes the room as large and the books as many and things like that, but it's still, the notices are there. If you have a difficult time understanding what the cataloging system is, then simply ask the customs clerk, how are these arranged? I think that the importer has a basic duty to inquire if they don't understand them. They can't just stand there, look around, and say, I don't understand this, and then walk out. The court has nothing further. I would simply ask that they affirm the decision of the trial court.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Simon has 2 minutes left.
Thank you. Your Honor, a few quick comments. First of all, it was not true that the form offer on liquidation contained the same information. And I go back to the question of what is the purpose of a liquidation notice. A liquidation posting is to allow an importer to look at the records and find out what customs did. On a regular liquidation notice, on the notice of liquidation form 4333, every one of them has a locator which will enable an importer by putting in a asking the clerk, I'd like to see this entry in this that's in this location, because there are thousands and thousands of entries. The clerk can go right to that file and pull out that entry, because it's in the locator. There is no locator number. There's no place where to locate that entry. In addition, Your Honor, I would like to also say that the ascertainment on February 8th was not, as stated by my colleague, because all the duties that were paid originally were not refunded. And in fact, in one of the entries for Samuel Allen, in addition to the gold jewelry, there was also rubber molds that were also entitled to GSP. Now those rubber molds, GSP was in effect for the rubber molds on June 30th of 1998. So when July 1st, or when this law was retroactively made to July 1st, the client actually got back 47 cents for the molds that were on that entry. But we didn't get it back, because on February 8th, that entry was listed as being, according to the government, they were going to reverse the refund, which goes to prove the point that, in fact, they had not done the calculation, because had they done the calculation on that entry, my client would have been entitled to 47 cents plus interest of the refund, because one of the items was, in fact, there. All Customs did was, as a matter of calculation, was say, well, everything that we had given back on 3 months before, we now want back. calculation. As a matter of fact, the record shows that that calculation was not done until April 12th. Mr. Ryan said they chose to run what's called a script because there was 1,000 entries. Had there been two, somebody could have physically gone to the entries and made the correction. But because there was 1,000, they needed more time. And they couldn't do that within the 90 days of the relist. So they said, we'll just put this in here as a list of these are the issues we're going to change, and we're going to do it sometime in the future. That future was April 12th. Had they done it February 8th, February 9th, we could have filed a protest against it because we would have been informed. The memo in March said, you'll be billed later. Well, to an importer, a bill means an entry will be liquidated in the future and you will get a bill for the duties that are owed. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. Because on April 30th, they issued a reliquidation of that entry. And within 5 days of that reliquidation, my client got a bill for that amount. And we then went and looked at the entry and determined what the purpose and what the bills were for. And we then subsequently filed protest against them. But it was clear, in this case, the government talks about regularity. And I just want to read one statement. The famous author, Lewis Carroll, in Through the Looking Glass, it's not correct, Your Honor, that just because the government says they're right, that they are right. They are not right in this case.
Is that in the record? We'll have to liquidate your argument. Thanks for taking under advisement.
Thank you.